Quantum all of a sudden just out of nowhere. And then Dev team stuff's dropping. Like, all these things are happening where it's like, I just don't know if a lot of Bitcoiners understand the war that's really actually happening.
I think it just takes things getting really, really bad for most people to wake up.
And so now you've built this house or this economic system in this country on top of sand or quicksand. You can't have honest society from dishonest money. Just like you can't have good fruit from a bad tree. It's not red versus blue, it's the state versus you. Homework is there to control the children outside of the state's reach. And it's to control them so they can't go talk to their based Uncle Walker at 7 o'clock at night. Cause guess what? They're doing homework thinking that this is gonna be easy. Like, government's gonna come in and like, it's gonna adopt it as legal tender and the game's over. That ain't how life works. Bitcoin is the first money, again, in my belief, it's the first money we've ever had. We're now off in this life raft, and you can only see the Titanic sinking from the life raft. It's not about Bitcoin price. It's the least fun part about what we do, and it's about how can we change humanity and reorient society.
There's all the talk, obviously, about AI. AI is going to take everyone's job. It's coming for your internet job. It's coming for your desk job, whatever it is. Anything that's, you know, has to do with the computer, like, it's going to replace you, right? I think I've said before, like, you know, it used to be learn to code. Now it's learn to podcast. I actually believe that's kind of true. I actually think that in this new paradigm that we're entering into, spoken word, because anybody can sound smart now while they're writing, right? You can, I mean, sure, people can tell it's AI when they're reading it, but you can still... Not everyone can tell, like, not everyone has their, you know, sensors up. And also, like, you can make some changes. Point is, you can sound pretty smart writing. It's less easy for AI to make you sound smart when you're speaking off the cuff, when you're just you know, two people here, even if we're separated, you know, by a computer screen across the country, across the world, you still have to have some verbal intelligence there. And so I honestly think we're going to see even a larger proliferation of kind of like micro, you know, micro podcasters, micro niche internet celebrities, whatever you want to say, people really stepping into that role more, streaming culture increasing even more because people want to know that they actually have a human connection, not just, hey, am I just reading something that somebody slopped together in like 30 seconds with Grok or Claude or ChatGPT, whatever it is. I'd love your take on it though.
Yeah. And it's funny you say this, Walker, because for a couple of years now, I've had this thought of more or less privacy, actually giving us more privacy at the end of the day. And so it kind of goes into this theme, this narrative of whether it's, you know, again, one of the big things recently is the crypto, like people are using, I just saw on like Zero Hedge or CNBC. It was like, well, crypto is using a bunch of my criminal activity right now and all this stuff. And it's like, are we serious? Like, is this, no one has two brain cells that rub together to like, just step back and be like cash guys. Like, are we serious? Like, it is the most non-traceable thing. Like, using Bitcoin is one of the dumber ways to do criminal activity. Not to say that you can't, obviously, but we have this world where we aren't thinking about anything. But in saying all this, before I go down too many tangents, like this world where you don't change Bitcoin, Bitcoin changes you. Because your stuff is out there more, you can go two ways with it. The one way I thought about it years ago was we're actually going to have less privacy in the sense of, you know, people can see what's going on, so you're on your best behavior. Well, that can create changes in society. So you do have part of that, and that, I think some of that will actually happen. But at the same time, we do have tools that are out there, open source, you know, code or whatever it is, where we actually have ways to do this privately. Now, you know, just your guy running a Venezuelan drug boat is not using the Bitcoin blockchain with Fetty Man. Like, he's not, like, they're not doing that. You know,
he,
like,
could, you know, he could,
but we ain't there yet. And so, that's where, like, someday. And it's just like, it's just so nonsensical, all the things we're dealing with right now. And that's where I think it's frustrating for a lot of us, because you just sit there and you're like, we're missing so much. We're missing the forest and the trees. Going back to the AI part of it though. Yeah. I mean, you know, we had farming, you know, like this is like the thing that gets talked about over the course of time, what's going to happen to the farmers. And I'm sure it's happened throughout history. The new technology comes along. What are we gonna do with the farmers? What are we gonna do with so-and-so? And it just comes back to people not having faith in humanity. And I think it's amplified now because of just social media and just the government. We're so dependent. So many people are so dependent on the government. We're at late stage republic, late stage managerialism, whatever you kind of want to call it, and there's some whatever cliche. But we're at this time where a lot of people can't fend for themselves here in America. They have no idea how to. We mentioned homeschooling offline, and you have 100 years, 100 plus years of government-run compulsory schooling training you to just conform, comply, obey. When can I go to the bathroom? When can I go on vacation? Do all these things. The bell rings, you know, okay, next shift, you know, whatever it is. That has trained a bunch of people to be robots, whether they know it or not. And I think that's one of the most insidious things. And we can talk about mindset too, because I truly believe the more now almost 10 years in Bitcoin for myself personally, the more you go down this rabbit hole, you see it as just a mindset thing. I mean, you know, Walker, you know better than anyone too. I mean, we could go sit here and 2 + 2 = 4 and show everyone the truth and the facts and all these things till we're blue in the face. But if someone's not ready up here, it don't matter. It does not matter. They're going to give you, oh, the government's going to do this, oh, this and that. It doesn't matter. And so you back up again. It's like, why is that? Why are, you know, and then it's government run compulsory schooling, conform, memorize, comply, obey. And it's just this world that we've built around ourselves, this cage we don't even realize is there anymore, where all of our ancestors coming over to America were entrepreneurs. You know, they were revolutionaries. They were inventors. They were entrepreneurial minded. They were visionaries. They were willing to risk it all, literally risk it all, leave their families forever. You know, never, I might not see them again. That takes a certain kind of person. And I'm not going to say unfortunately, but we're just at a different point in society now at this point, where we're second, third, fifth, 10th generation in, where, hey, there's a lot of us that haven't had to earn that. We haven't had to take those risks and those gambles. And so, you know, it leads you to, how do you actually get, you know, cross that chasm? How do we actually cross the Delaware this time? It's probably through Max Payne. You know, it's probably through some type of Max Payne mixed with some education. People come find these videos at some point when they're ready to drink the water finally. And I don't know. I think we're a little ways from that. People still have it way too good. DraftKings is still up and running. Kalshi markets are still going. So we have a little bit ways to go here, I think, Walker.
Did you see, just on the prediction market thing, did you see that there's now, they're doing like these prediction markets on just like traffic flows? Did you see this video that went viral?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's just peak degeneracy. It's literally like this guy screaming at his computer screen because he's bet on somehow the number, like plus or minus on the number of cars which will pass through a particular intersection. And some guy was like taking a really slow right turn, and he was like about to live, and he's like screaming at his computer screen, like, take the fucking turn. What are you doing? And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, it's, and granted, I have no problem with people gambling, right? I have no problem with people doing whatever you want with your money if it's not, like, if you're not actively using it to harm other people, right? Yeah, do what you want. That's your business, your money. That being said, I can call out degenerate behavior when I see it. And I have to wonder where we're at right now. Again, what we're seeing with kind of the hyper gamification, I don't know what the right word there is, everything turning into gambling, everything turning into high level, short-term thinking, speculation. It's just like, we've seen this movie before. We've seen it every time. And I'm not saying like the dollar's going to collapse tomorrow. I think that people who say like the dollar's going to collapse and then talk about the dollar collapsing in a vacuum are not being totally honest. Cause like, let's be honest, if the dollar collapses, that probably means every other fiat currency, almost every other, has like just collapsed a little while ago. And this would, you know, this isn't something that just happens. Like, only the dollar collapsed and nothing else. Like, the euro is fine. You know, the yen is fine, the, you know, ruble is fine, whatever. No, it will mean that we have already reached a point where most fiat currencies have collapsed and maybe respawned again and collapsed again. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
The point here being, though, that these are clearly late stage vibes, late stage fiat vibes, regardless of which fiat you're talking about, just fiat in general, right? The dollar is arguably the best fiat out there. It's, you know, it's the prettiest horse of the glue factory. It's the skinniest kid at fat camp, whatever you want to say. Like, it's the best of the worst. But you see all this stuff happening. I even see with the various, you know, crypto exchanges, the shitcoin casinos these days, you know, whether it be Gemini, whether it be Coinbase, whether it be Robinhood, which has started leading more and more into crypto, they've now also pivoted to prediction markets. And now they all offer prediction markets. I'm sure the other ones do too. Those are just the ones that I've seen do this. And I just have to wonder, is this them also sort of tacitly acknowledging that, like, the crypto grift is sort of over? Because that's all it ever was gambling. It was gambling, except insiders could print the tokens you were gambling on and make a huge profit off you. Now it's like, if you're going to gamble, why gamble with something that insiders control and are going to rug you with? Why not just have it just be straight gambling? And I think that's where a lot of these exchanges are going. It's almost just saying, like, look, we know the crypto grift has kind of run its game. Let's get into just real gambling. Like, let's cut out all the tokens, cut out all the BS. Let's just call this what it is. It's gambling. So at least they're being more honest there. I don't know if you've sensed that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at a lot of what goes on too. I mean, again, we were talking about this offline of, you know, the Bitcoin content is suppressed across the board everywhere. I mean, this is the one thing that the people at the top can't control is Bitcoin. And it's the only thing that we know of that they cannot control. And so therefore, we know that it's going to be endless amounts of FUD, as we've seen, whether it was like energy stuff for years. And now all of a sudden, they can use energy to their advantage with centralized control of AI, which, you know, you mentioned a minute ago. So now it's okay. Energy is okay. And now it's hard to use that against Bitcoin. So now we see quantum immediately. Like, it springs up. It's like clockwork. It's like, how did that? So like, that's where, like, as a first principle thinker, for me, I like back up a medium, like, whoa, 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 like, this quantum stuff, you'd hear about it here and there, but like, this has been going on for a long time. People have been thinking about quantum stuff for a long time too, just like they've been thinking about Bitcoin or, you know, how to move value across the internet for decades. And that's another topic for another, you know, we could get into later, I guess, but just like the genesis, you know, Bitcoin being there, and people think it's like, well, that was like the start of it. And that's why all this crypto stuff has come about. Like, well, it's MySpace, boomer tech. So like, we're going to go to a new crypto. And it's like, no, that's Bitcoin is the end of the line. They've been working on this for decades, and they found fire. They discovered fire finally. And it was like, oh my gosh. Like, here we have it. We put it together the right way. And so you have this world where the endless FUD, like quantum, all of a sudden just out of nowhere. And then the Epstein stuff's dropping. Like, all these things are happening where it's like, whoa, we just got rid of like the energy FUD and that got squashed. And now, it just, again, it goes to show you, and I might've talked about this before too, but like, then you go into like the, you know, the really big thing the last handful of months is figuring out what happened to Charlie Kirk, you know, the Candace Owens of the world and the Baron Coleman. There's some people that have created huge accounts just all of a sudden trying to like adjudicate what happened there. And you know, the powers that be in my mind love that stuff because the target's here. And they're the town over. But when you drop bombs on the town over, you're not hitting the target and you're causing mass distraction. You're having people go run around, very intelligent people go around and spend months and months trying to adjudicate something that really at the end of the day, does it matter what happened? Like we should know what happened to Charlie Kirk, but is it going to matter? I think the question should be like, how is this happening? You know, why is it happening more than who did it? Because that doesn't really get us anywhere. I mean, look, even the Epstein files kind of proved that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we've known for a long time and people just whistle in the graveyard again. I mean, like, what did the Epstein files really prove at the end of the day? Like, no, I don't see anyone doing anything about it. Like, there's really nothing happening. And so maybe even the larger question, Walker, is like, and I'm curious, even your thought of it too, is like, what kind of event horizon have we crossed? I feel like we've crossed some event horizon in society where people are so black-pilled almost and so just like sedated mentally with the sports gambling, with literal, figurative, illegal and legal drugs, et cetera, right? Where that was like the communism playbook was to break the will of the Western person and the American. You go back into all these psychological things and a lot of it was to break the will of human beings. And how do you break the will? You know, it's the torture stuff, like all these things. You can break the will of a human and then you have them. That's how you know, create slaves basically. And so whether it was schooling or whether it was these political movements to break the will of people where it's like, it's hopeless, it's done. And I even get into those bouts myself here and there where I have to protect myself or I have to watch myself, right? I mean, I'm sure a lot of us Bitcoiners get into those at sometimes where you're like, and it's really sinister because you feel like, hey, we have the answer. The root, the oil spill up 10 miles up the river, the source of the spill is up here and everyone else is 10 miles downstream trying to clean it with pool skimmers. And you're sitting there like, we got the answer, guys. Like, we can just go turn off the spigot up there and turn off the oil flow into the river and it won't contaminate anything else. And no one knows. Like, they don't care. They don't hear you. And they're just, you know, still got their pool skimmer going. So it can be really sinister because you're like, wow, we have the answer and no one seems to care at all. So then you really get jaded at times. And so society's jaded, you know, we're jaded. And I don't know what the end answer is, how this fleshes out, because it's going to flesh itself out somehow, some way or another. I just don't know if it's the whimper or bang. I don't know if it's, you know, 10, 20 years from now, the demographic shift and the boomers and the silent generation go away and the wealth is now in the hands of Gen X and Gen Y millennials. And then we just like naturally kind of flow into this next state, or if we have some cataclysmic, you know, black swan, civil war, you know, whatever. That to me is the time period we're living in right now, where it's not just a fourth turning. It's really a bunch of cycles coming together and we're seeing things, you know, play out. And all that being said, it's also the greatest time to ever live in human history as well. I mean, like the amount of, you know, we live like kings now, especially in the West. So like you have to juxtapose it with, we've never had more information. We wouldn't know any of these things were happening if it wasn't for technology and social media. And there's ills of social media, but then at the same time, we now know these things because of social media. So how does this get rectified? None of us know. And it's fascinating to live during this time. And I'm glad we are. I mean, this is where I think a lot of us Bitcoiners are built for this fight. And that's what we're literally put here for. And it's fun to be part of it. It's crazy. You get jaded. You get your black pilled at times. You're orange pilled. You're white pilled. You're red pilled. And so I don't know. But I would even love your thought on just how does this rectify itself?
Wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Ledin makes that possible. The global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, Ledin has issued over $10 billion in loans since 2018 and has a perfect record of protecting client assets. Why is a Ledin loan different? Well, with custodied loans, collateral is not lent out to generate interest. No credit checks, no monthly payments, apply in minutes and repay whenever you want, with zero penalties. And proof of reserves reports verified by a top accounting firm are published every 6 months. Ledin gives Bitcoin holders a secure, transparent way to unlock liquidity without selling. Learn more at ledin.io/walker. That's ledin.io/walker. If you're hodling Bitcoin personally or for a business, here's the uncomfortable truth. You probably don't have insurance. Most policies exclude Bitcoin, and the ones that don't, they only pay you back in fiat. What's the point of that if you need to claim a loss when number go up? That's not insurance, that's liquidation. Now there's another option, BDIC. They're building an insurance marketplace on the Bitcoin standard. One Bitcoin lost equals one Bitcoin paid. They've integrated with Liana Business for enterprise self-custody, with personal wallet coverage options coming later this year. If you care about protecting your Bitcoin as Bitcoin, sign up for the waitlist at bdic.io/walker. That's bdic.io/walker. Insurance on the Bitcoin standard. Blockstream Jade Plus delivers robust security with fully open source hardware and software. Its unique genuine check feature ensures your device is authentic, giving you ultimate peace of mind. With versatile connectivity options, including Bluetooth, USB-C, built-in camera, and SD card, Jade Plus offers unparalleled flexibility in managing your Bitcoin. Whether you prefer wireless convenience or air-gapped security, Jade has you covered. Its innovative design features a durable metal case, a bright 1.9-inch color screen, and intuitive navigation buttons that make managing your Bitcoin straightforward and enjoyable. Jade Plus also supports secure, air-gapped transactions via QR code signing using the Jade Link storage device, keeping your Bitcoin safe without compromising convenience. Visit store.blockstream.com and use my coupon code WALKER for an exclusive 10% discount on your Blockstream Jade Plus. Protect your Bitcoin, sleep better, stack harder. You brought up something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I'm in the process of writing on, and maybe also turn that writing into like a YouTube series or something, because you know, reading words, who wants to do that these days? But
losers.
This idea of it's not just the fourth turning into the first turning, right? That there's this larger, what I'm calling like a cyclical convergence, right? Or, you know, a super cycle, to use Bitcoiner terms. Mm-hmm. And the idea of that being that we have multiple cycles, whether that be socioeconomic, political, technological, monetary, generational, all converging at this special point right now. It's not a discrete point, like it's a bit of a continuous point, right? Because it's a period of time in which these things converge. But you have, like, everybody knows about the turnings, right? And I'll get to why I think this is kind of answers the question of how does this rectify itself? But to set the stage a little bit, you have different cycles, right? The generational cycle is the one that most people know, you know, the fourth turning, Strauss and Howe, right? The theory of generations, basically. So, you know, you've got those fourth generations, and after the, you know, the fourth turning, like into the newest, back to the first turning, you've got a period of intense upheaval, chaos, right? That one's like, that's easy to identify, right? We're living in that cycle right now. there's another cycle that I identified that I think also fits into this with where we're living right now, which is Polybius's anacyclosis. It's like a 2,000 year old plus theory from a Greek philosopher and historian named Polybius. And the idea of that is that there's these cycles of governance. So it starts out with monarchy, a strong leader, like a good monarch, a benevolent monarch, a king that actually leads his people, cares about his people, right? That monarchy eventually, whether it's that particular monarch or another monarch in the line, descends into a sort of tyranny, a dictatorship, from which humanity or society is brought out of that by an aristocracy, an aristocratic class of well-meaning aristocrats who actually want to make things better and no longer want themselves and the people to live under the tyranny of this dictator. But the aristocracy, as the monarch devolved into a tyrant, the aristocracy devolves into an oligarchy. That oligarchy then becomes oppressive, becomes exploitative. You know, it's a kleptocratic class. And that is eventually replaced by democracy, by the people getting together and saying, you know, we can't leave the power. You know, so it goes from one leader to then a smaller subset of leaders to then everybody's having a say in what happens. Mm-hmm. That's democracy. But democracy ultimately devolves yet again into mob rule, or what is technically termed oglocracy, which literally, you know, means mob rule. And then the cycle repeats again. And the only thing that pulls you out of mob rule is a strong leader, a monarch, a king, right? Somebody who is going to function in that state to be the strong man, to be the, you know, the great man that creates the good times out of the hard ones. And I think that we're seeing that right now. I think we're seeing the devolution from the democracy stage to the mob rule stage, oglocracy. Mm-hmm. And that is also dovetailing right now with the fourth turning, right? On top of that, then lay over Kondratyev waves, he was a Russian economist who got killed by the Soviets because he basically showed that capitalism actually works. Like when it seems like capitalism is dying, actually it's just kind of a natural flushing out of all the crap, and then it comes back again stronger than ever, and it's therefore superior to Soviet communism for these reasons, and they killed him for it. His writings weren't public until many, many decades later after the fall of the Soviet Union. But then you also see that this lines up as well, this time we're in, with Ray Dalio's theory of long-term debt cycles. It lines up as well with the rises and falls of fiat currency. It lines up with, like, I can go on for a while about this, mm-hmm. but I'll stop in a second here. It lines up with all these different cycles. And so what does that mean right now? Well, it means we're going to live through one of the most tumultuous periods that human history has ever experienced, because so many things are lining up at once. We're also in a globally connected world, which adds a new sort of wrench or factor into this, because we haven't had this sort of global connectivity before. It's, you could sort of look at these things societally in isolation somewhat, but now we've got a digitally connected world. It's totally different. But then we have a couple other X factors. We have AI, which should enable a hyper deflationary future. And we have Bitcoin, the first time we've ever had Bitcoin. Bitcoin has not existed before. Nothing like Bitcoin has ever existed. And I was talking to Jeff Booth about this actually as I was initially pitching this theory to him a while back. And I was kind of very doom and gloom. And I was basically like, well, Jeff, like basically all this research is telling me like we're fucked right now. Like we are seriously fucked because it's going to get bad. And then we're going to start over and we're going to repeat again. And it'll get good after a while. But, you know, then we'll just go and we'll be doomed again to repeat those cycles. And those cycles should also be, they may be accelerating as well in terms of how rapidly they happen. And he was like, Walker, it's great and all, but the problem is you're not considering fact that Bitcoin was this 0-1 moment, that Bitcoin actually changes this paradigm. So yeah, it will get nasty. But what emerges on the other side is going to be something we've never seen before, because we can't have seen it before. There was no way for us to have seen this before. And as usual, Jeff Booth kind of blew my mind with that, putting it very simply and easily. Back to your initial question, what does it take to break this? I think it takes the collapse. I don't think most people, I know this is maybe not a nice thing to say, but I don't think most people are going to proactively wake up themselves. I don't think they're going to proactively unplug themselves from the matrix. I don't think they're going to proactively decide to take a step back and evaluate all of this in a critical way and say, whoa, this is messed up, and prepare themselves before the fall happens. I think they will only realize that they maybe should have been doing something for a long time as the fall is accelerating and occurring. That may be a bit of a dark prognosis, but I think that it's just the reality. Usually nobody throughout human history, like, the majority of people don't see the collapse coming. Very few people see the collapse coming. If everyone saw the collapse coming, there wouldn't be a collapse, because there would be widespread action taken to avoid that. But they don't see it. They're too busy with other things, too busy just trying to survive. And so sadly, I think that what does it take? What does it take to break people out of this? I think it just takes things getting a heck of a lot worse. Now, what will their response to that be? I don't know. That response might actually make things continually worse because the wrong things are going to get scapegoated. Bitcoin's going to get scapegoated. Bitcoiners are going to get scapegoated.
Yep.
Those greedy Bitcoiners who've been hoarding all their wealth, and they're the reason that I'm, you know, poor, that I'm suffering, da-da-da-da-da. I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think we somewhat already are. You're going to see more of these unrealized capital gains taxes and things. The ability to move with Bitcoin in your head is going to become incredibly vital. It already is, but it'll become more so. And so sadly, Brandon, I think, like, what does it take? I think it just takes things getting really, really bad for most people to wake up. Maybe that's too dark of a prognosis. Maybe more people will. I just personally don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I agree with you wholeheartedly, really. I do think it's, like you said, it's, there's great abundance on the backside, but we don't know when that backside is. And when that's going to happen. And all throughout history, like you laid out in different ways, it's a lot of people bearing, you know, that cross, you know, carrying their cross, you know, in different ways. And it's, you know, some way, shape or fashion. And you might not see the end game. You might not see the end of that, but humanity is built on a lot of people carrying that torch of liberty or truth or whatever it is, to whatever ends that means. I mean, everyone's going to have a different path, obviously, but it's not going to be all, unicorns and rainbows going forward. For people that, again, we just know from human history, like anyone that's trying to carry the truth forward, you're going to be persecuted, you're going to be ridiculed, you're going to be come after. That's just it. And I that's the one thing I think that scares me for Bitcoiners in general. We were talking about offline a little bit, like there definitely feels like there's a capitulation just across the board of, like, I think there's a lot of Bitcoiners, again, in my opinion, I just don't know if a lot of Bitcoiners understand the war that's really actually happening, and thinking that this is going to be easy. Like, government's going to come in and, like, it's going to adopt it as legal tender and the game's over. That ain't how life works, you know? And again, we can get it, like, really ephemeral. Like, I truly believe life is good versus evil spirits, and they're fighting 24/7, 365 all the time in a realm that we can't see. It comes and manifests itself on our human level, obviously, at many times, but we're in a fight that we just don't even understand. And we're players on this chessboard that we don't understand. And that's really what's at the crux of all this. And so, until, again, in my belief, people start understanding that, which Max Payne, putting people on their hands and knees, generally brings you back to that point of just surrender and be like, hey, I'm not the center of the universe. Then and only then can you start to regrow from, you know, a firm setting and, you know, a firm foundation. And we get away from that. You know, like, you go back to all throughout human history of, like, I'm going to be God. I'm going to play God. I'm going to build the Tower of Babel all the way to whatever. Like, we know better. We're going to human gene edit, you know, children and, you know, bake them in a, you know, fake AI thing and they're whatever. It's like, well, how do you think that's going to turn out? You know, like, what are we, you know, like, you can argue with me all you want all day long, but, like, when you're trying to be God and play God all the time, I mean, history shows you that doesn't fare well. Like, you don't do well long-term doing that. So again, that's maybe a different talk for a different day potentially, but this is just, it's all you see. That's all I see. I'm 38 years old and seeing this and being in politics my whole life and being, you know, a faith-filled person and then seeing the money part of this and putting all these things together. And it's just very obvious that we need Max Payne. We need to go through these trials and tribulations to forge in the fire the truth again and come back out the other side. Cause I don't know what it, you know, a few people are, they, you know, you get it, you see it up front, the early adopters, things of that nature. But like you said, people need to go through that suffering, that pain in order to be jolted into, you know, snapped back to reality, because we've gotten so far away from the truth. And, you know, like, even, you know, my kids, I tell them, like, hey, every time you lie or whatever it is, like, you're getting further away from truth, you know, like, so the further you get away and the more lies you tell, you're going to snap back that much harder. And your life's going to be, you know, that much more of a jolt coming back to the truth. Because that happens at some point. We all go through it, little to big degrees, whatever it is. But I don't know. I don't know, Walker. It's like, it's a wild time. But at the same time, again, I'm very hopeful. Like, it's an incredible time. Human history has gone through these things many times. It will continue to go through these things. But like you said, and Jeff said, it's a 0-1 moment. And this is maybe the other place to take this too, which is, again, Bitcoin is the first money, again, in my belief, it's the first money we've ever had. So humans have never been able to actually coordinate on a global scale until now. And that's a radical thought, I know, to most people, to non-Bitcoiners. no coiners or pre-coiners, but we've just never been able to, as Gigi wrote about, you know, years ago, it's, we have physical tokens and we have ledgers, and we could not, you know, physical tokens are great. If it's just like Walker and I, we're at a conference, or like we're, you know, exchanging tokens, or our family, like, you know, your street or where you live on, it's like, yeah, like great. Like we can exchange, you know, this gold and silver to each other, and that's fine. But you can't have global commerce. Or I should say this, if you want to have global commerce, and I guess that's the question of humanity has to ask too, right? Like, do you want global commerce? Do you want this world or something resembling this, right? Because if you do, then you have to choose one of these ways. If you want just a local tribe and you're in your teepee, then great. Then go use physical, you know, metal and silver. That's fine. Or, you know, or gold and silver. But if you want a global economy and you want to be able to transact with people, you know, in Wisconsin and Michigan, or you know, Massachusetts and Thailand, or whatever it is, you need something, a ledger that, you know, can't be effed with by some government entity or centralized entity, and to, you know, have that finality all across and be audited every 10 minutes and do that across the world, or, you know, at the speed of light. That's what we're dealing with, and that's the question that humanity has not been able to wrap their minds, going back, coming full circle now to the conform, comply, obey with school, of people just accepting, like, governments, well, governments, money comes from the governments. And it's, again, money was here before we had governments, and it'll be here after we have governments. And coming back to what you're saying of, like, going from this pendulum swinging of going from despots, you know, or monarchies to oligarchies to kings, and then going to democracies and the nation state, all these things. And we keep getting better over time, you know, I guess we'll say, in just a very zoomed out approach. But so we keep getting better. And now maybe, hey, can we organize? We finally found money. The best money we've ever found as humans. So now can we reorganize ourselves a new way going forward? And I think that's what humanity, and I think you were alluding to as well, not to put words in your mouth, but that's where we're headed. And that's why it's so tumultuous.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I'm alluding to. And like, I do think long-term, I'm very, very bullish on humanity. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying here.
Yep.
I've never been more bullish and hopeful on humanity. I'm very white-pilled. I'm orange-pilled, right?
Yeah.
It's just that you also have to realize that in the interim, in the near term future, things are going to get, like, the night is always darkest just before the dawn,
yeah,
as the old saying goes, right? It's going to get worse before it gets better. Then I think it will get better than we could have ever possibly imagined. But that's going to take some time. But this is the thing too, is I think so what I see so much from people, we talked about the kind of political influencer class a little bit earlier, and getting back to that slightly, one of the things that I think frustrates me, I'm sure it frustrates you and a lot of Bitcoiners, is when you see this sort of political class, whether it be the politicians or the influencers or whatever, but politicians really are just elected influencers. That's what it comes down to, right? That's basically what their job is. That's, you know, let's be honest about it. But when you see them, the focus is always on the problem, but they're never actually focused on the problem. They're focused on a problem that happens to be whatever that particular problem is for them, that hot button talking point topic that they drill home in all their speeches when they hold their hands like this, which no real person ever holds their hand like this, but for some reason politicians do that weird thumb thing. And I'm like, what are you doing? Nobody does that. Quit being a freak. But they have their topics, their problems, their issues that they can always blame on the other side and talk about how they're going to be the savior. They're going to, you know, they have the God complex. They're the ones that's going to come in and fix this for you. And they're the only ones who can do it. But they never talk about the problem. They never talk about the fundamental problem. They never talk about the base layer foundational problem, which is the broken money. And so they're always talking about the problem, always putting blame, always doing this. And here's how I'm going to solve it. But that doesn't actually solve anything. It's a Band-Aid on a chainsaw wound, right? It's like you just cut off your leg at the knee with a chainsaw, but it's like, well, we'll just put a Band-Aid on it. Should be fine. That'll get me elected. They never go deeper because they can't go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of something else that you said about this tendency for humans to want to play God. And I actually think very fundamentally, it's that tendency that has made fiat currency what it is, right? Mm, it's that, because what are you doing when you have control of the money printer? You are essentially saying, I am God.
Yep.
I am me and this little group of, you know, unelected banker bureaucrats. We're smarter than the entire world. We're smarter than everybody acting in their own self-interest in the free market. We can't allow that free market to happen, so we must set the price of money. We are smarter than, we can't possibly let people just freely exchange value and use money that's not being debased by us. We have to control it. And so it's like the ultimate fiat God complex is thinking that you are smarter than the free market, smarter than individuals just working in their self-interest, doing things selfishly, what I think is going to be best for me and my family. And that coordination mechanism, that messy, messy coordination mechanism is somehow, you know, it's just inferior. We can't let that happen. We gotta control this. We gotta control the economy. We gotta centrally plan it, right?
Yep.
And that's the thing. But most people aren't ready to have that conversation, Brandon. Most people, if I say stuff like that, you know, like, well, but we should have some, you know, well, there should be someone. And it's like, no.
Eyes glaze over.
No. Yeah. Because it doesn't, because even a little bit of it, even a little distortion ruins those free market incentives. It just distorts what would otherwise be good incentives and perverts them. This is why I'm against any subsidy of any kind, right? Because it just creates perverse incentives. And people have so much trouble with that because they're like, well, yeah, we should get rid of like solar subsidies, but we should still, you know, keep subsidies for the farmers and oil. And it's like, no, no, we shouldn't. That's why we're in this mess. But people, they just don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that everything that they've been voting for has just made things worse and worse and worse. And that when they keep voting, they make things continually worse. Like that's the really, that's at the core of it is you can't vote your way out of this. If you could vote your way out of it, we would have already voted our way out of it. But you can't, so we haven't. But most people just are not—they're not prepared for that. I don't know if—I don't know if democracy really works fundamentally. Like, that's maybe a different story. But I don't know where you stand on this. But it's like it's been a really interesting experiment. I think I don't know how well it actually works in practice. Like, and the system can be gamed, and it can be gamed now more than ever. And it's like, you know, people are always going to vote for their side to get more free stuff, right? That's just a fundamental thing. So you've got perverse incentives at what is supposed to be the base coordination layer, which is going to fundamentally pervert the entire system. I don't know. Are you a democracy fan? I mean, democracy is great, right? It's just, you know.
I mean, like you said, it's good. It's great in theory. And this is like communism. Communism is great in theory, too. I mean, like if we're all even, we're all equal and like we're all robots and like, yeah, like that's. In theory, and there's a saying in hockey, like growing up, you know, we'd always say like, you can't destroy your stick on the ice and you can't like the paper, you got to play the game, you know? And like in reality, a lot of these economic systems or these political systems don't hold up to reality. In theory, they're great, but in practice, they don't play out that well. And so democracy is one of those things too. And this is to your point, this is why we were a federal constitutional republic, right? And this is like, it was the best system, that we had from, it's like, finding Bitcoin. It's like finding this protocol of like, hey, we put together the best things that people have been trying to do for a long, long time. And we studied all of them like, hey, here, and look, I mean, it obviously created what we have now and we have today. And it's lasted this long generally. I mean, again, people could argue like, well, it broke a while ago. And it's like, yeah, okay, we can, but I would say that that's because 1913 happened. We had, the third central bank finally is here. And now it's here for 100 plus years, 110, 112 years, whatever. And that to me is the breaking of it. And that's why it's broke. I look at it, Walker, as like, you have your economic, your money that you choose, going back to these biblical principles too of just the foundation, right? If you choose to build your house on rock or sound money, then you're going to have an economic system or a political system that you can put on top of that. But if you have this system where like, hey, we have capitalism or even a republic or whatever it is, it's going to dissolve into this quicksand because if you have this broken world, or I shouldn't say, because I know saying broken money, it kind of gives people this false perception in a way, because fiat currencies are doing exactly, and you kind of mentioned this earlier a little bit, but they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do, which is steal your time and energy and play God. It's a bunch of people at the top thinking, I know better than you. I know better than the entire free market of all 1 trillion inputs every day that go into the economy. We know better than that. And so you're playing God. And so now you've built this house or this economic system in this country on top of sand or quicksand. And so, of course, it's going to eventually dissolve and fall into the sand and just become gobbledygook and just this mess. And no one can figure out what's going on. That's exactly where we find ourselves now. So you have to rebuild your system. And where I'm going with this is a lot of people confuse it too. I've gotten into a lot of arguments with people, actually. And of course, they're usually finance people. They're highly educated, 120, 150 IQ people who are telling you, well, inflation is part of capitalism and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, these things are not together. They conflate all of it and don't understand that the money you choose to use is not part of this economic system. You could have any type of money you wanted, and then you put an economic or political system on top of that. Just like Bitcoin's in layers, most people don't know that, right? Like they don't understand these things are built in layers. You don't just like, it's like one size fits all. It's like just how everyone wants to, like it's a vending machine. It's like, oh, one size fits all. It's like, do everything in my life now. It's like, that's not how these things work. And so because we've had, going back to government-run schooling and all these things for so long, people don't, not only do they not learn it, they don't even know how to learn it. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to think. They don't even know how to think. And so we found ourselves in this state of disarray where it's hard to just climb back out of. And that's coming back to a lot of things we've been saying, like the strongman world is why you have this strongman come back in, because you've gotten off the rails so much. I mean, you look at the Roman Empire, these republics again, that had sound money that worked for hundreds of years. And then all of a sudden they start debasing the currency, you know, coin clipping and melting them down. And then, so what's happening is the train is so far off the track at this point. And the term I keep using is event horizon. Like, I feel like we've crossed the event horizon of, I don't know how you can't put the train, you can't just like in one fell swoop put the train back on the tracks, because the train's so far off the tracks that people, what's got us here is these little movements. We're like, okay, we put the train up off the tracks and it's like, you know, a 1 yard away. But now we find ourselves like 10 miles away from the tracks. So now people just want like this one, and we all do it. Like I do it. We're like, well, it's just one solution. And it's like, that's not how it works. Like you have to like implement this thing back just as slowly basically as it began, but that's not how life works. People go, you go to civil war, like you go to these wars, revolutions, wars, civil wars. It doesn't work like that. Again, theory, it's great, but it doesn't play out in reality like that. So all that to be said, it's, you know, the Republic, this is why they've been attacking the Electoral College. They attack all these institutions and how we are designed purposely. The Electoral College is one of the most unbelievable things, you know, to have, because it keeps from, like what you just said, it keeps from mob rule. It keeps from four cities in the entire country dictating who's the president. But again, no one even knows how the Electoral College works. If you looked at 100 people, 99 of them say, well, yeah, get rid of that. I mean, even maybe all 100 would say, yeah, get rid of that thing. We should just be whoever votes it in. Like, that's how it happens. And it's like, yeah, you're right. A bunch of these geniuses didn't know what they were doing. And we've had all this freedom for so long because we didn't do that. I mean, it's just, it's nonsensical. So to your point, the original question, yes, democracy, not a fan. We devolve into mob rule. It's natural. And we have democratic characteristic of like we vote, because that's part of like a democracy, but that's the only real like democratic thing we have. And if you notice, Republicans and Democrats have been saying this for a long time, like 10, 15, 20 years. They say democracy, right? Democracy dies in darkness. It's the Wall Street Journal headline or whatever it is, like the Washington Post. It's their little headline. We don't have a democracy, for crying out loud. Like it's a weaponized language. Social security, like it's going to secure you later in life. Like all these things are just completely bastardized. And it's a psyop to make you think like, oh, and they all do it. All the politicians, they all do it. Like they're democracy. This is an affront to our democracy. This is an insurrection against the democracy. It's not a democracy. And that's, again, but the average person has no idea, because we're so dependent, because the money is fiat or the currency. We don't have money. We have currency and doesn't have a store of value to it. So they just are able to keep you on the hamster wheel. And here we are. We don't have time to even figure out what's happening, to even see what's going on, to even ask a question. And the average person is just right back on the hamster wheel the next day. No time to do any of it. And then when they get home, they're so tired, they just want to flip on the game. To get to bring up their Polymarket, their Kalshi, or all this stuff, right? Get on DraftKings and just, you know, piss the rest of their life away because they're too tired to do anything else. And they know that at the end of the month they're not gonna have money for rent because it's been inflated away. So they're just like, you know what? It's here, I'm going up to Canada. We're getting the maid program. You know, like I'm done. I've had it, you know. So it's sad. You got a laugh walker, right? Or otherwise you cry. So
we laugh to keep from weeping.
Literally.
But so this actually I think is a good transition to one of the other topics I wanted to bring up with you, which is around education, because I think what you were saying is spot on about that. Even Bitcoin doesn't fix everything just by existing, right? Mm-hmm. It creates an architecture in which we have the possibility of fixing things, but we have to also, we have to fix other things. Like Bitcoin doesn't inherently necessarily automatically snap your fingers, Bitcoin exists, everything's fixed.
Yeah.
No. We also have to look at the other underlying things. And I think one of the most important things is our educational system. We talked about this before. I was homeschooled. I also then made the decision to go into high school. And so I've seen both sides of the coin, right? I was homeschooled and then saw the public school thing. That gave me some insights on both sides of things a bit. You homeschool your kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fantastic. I know a ton of Bitcoiners and people in general now are looking at homeschooling and saying, huh, maybe this is something I need to look at, because look at what the education system is doing. I mean, it's not an education system, it's an indoctrination system, right?
Yep.
It's modeled after, you know, you look at the places where, I forget if you and I have talked about this before, but, you know, Germany, homeschooling is illegal there still.
Mm-hmm.
Who made it illegal? Adolf Hitler and the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they do that? Why would the Nazis not want to make it illegal for you to homeschool your kids? Well, because then they wouldn't be able to indoctrinate them. Then you could educate them at home as you see fit, and they wouldn't be indoctrinated with your Nazi propaganda. They couldn't allow that. That goes back, that idea of compulsory public schooling goes even back further to kind of the Prussian era, right? And basically creating kids that would be good little workers or good little soldiers or both. and basically would, you know, sit up straight, stand in a row, stand in line, don't ask questions, do as you're told, and be a good little bit of cannon fodder there. But when did you make the decision, you and your wife, to homeschool your kids? Was it from the very first kid you had, or did you guys start a little later? Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. So our oldest actually went to a private Catholic school for 2 years, for kindergarten and first grade. And it was actually a weird transition time because long story, but we had a tree come through the kitchen in our house in a storm. So we actually were out of our house for a year. So it just happened to be we weren't in a great position to be doing the homeschooling. We were living with both of our parents at different times. It was just wild times. And anyway, so that was a handful of years ago. And so we'd always kind of thought about homeschooling to a degree, and obviously the Bitcoin community is a big reason for that as well. And then COVID obviously happened, so that was a huge thing as well. And for our time and just for what it made sense to go to school for a year or two. But then you get into it, and the school is phenomenal, the people are phenomenal, all of it. But again, you have to be careful because generally, the teachers are still taught at the same universities, state, government run schools, or what have you. Or, some of the big things that I had a problem with were the kids would go outside for recess once a day and for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, and then it rained a little bit, and they're like, oh, sorry, we're not going outside. And the kids should be doing that half the day. What are we doing? And then they come home with homework or things like that. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. So then you read, John Taylor Gatto books, which, Daniel Prince is the one that showed me those a number of years ago. And, it's homework is there to control the children outside of the state's reach. And it's to control them so they can't go talk to their based Uncle Walker at 7 o'clock at night. Cause guess what? They're doing homework. I can't talk to based Uncle Brandon because, it keeps the state in control even when they're not in school. And you're like, we've been doing this for 8 hours a day. You couldn't figure this out for 8 hours. And so it's just this, you have to have this healthy disdain for the state in all aspects. And we see now, whether it's the food, the schooling, Hollywood pop culture, all these different things where they infiltrate it. I mean, again, going back to the Frankfurt School, the Marxists coming over 100 years ago and getting control of the schooling, again, even to a bigger degree than even the Rockefeller stuff or late 1800s, early 1900s. But all these kind of different facets coming together. And then Hollywood, that was a thing that they purposely took over Hollywood. Because if you can control, obviously, the media and Hollywood and all the big different tenants, the kids when they're young, even there was a Bernie Sanders guy a few years ago, which it's not to, I shouldn't even say who it was, I guess, but it was someone that was working in the Bernie Sanders campaign. But the point is, it could be any side. And they admitted we absolutely want your kids in the state, even at three. That's why you see this push to, the 3 years old and they're in school and subsidizing it. And it's a glorified daycare. And that's why because the parents are on the hamster wheel, mom and dad both have to work because we have fiat currencies. Now it's it makes sense, And then why do we think that the vouchers don't happen? All these things to get your money back from paying property taxes to go then do the schooling you want. Why the hell is it not passed anywhere at all time? It's always this fight. It's so insane. But when you zoom out, you can't. It's so hard to see, and you said this for years, Walker, right? It's not red versus blue, it's the state versus you. And if you can't, you can really only see that generally from the Bitcoin ecosystem. That's the only place where you're in a protocol outside of all of that. And gold and silver guys might, they're kind of there, but you're still hanging off the edge of the Titanic because you're still, it's still rooted in fiat and you're measuring through fiat. You're not measuring, ounces because you can't globally transact with anyone. Because Bitcoin, you can globally transact and it's an auditing system. We're now off in this life raft and you can only see the Titanic sinking from the life raft. You cannot see these things from the life raft. That's why school, all the things that we're saying don't make sense if you're still in those systems, fighting red versus blue, shuffling deck chairs, trying to vote for a new captain after you've hit the iceberg. Well, good luck. You're still going to be 12,000 feet under the water in the next 4 hours. It does not matter. So we as soon as we were able to, we pulled the kids out of school because we were, again, our jobs are flexible. I mean, we do this stuff, full time doing, Bitcoin education. And my wife has a flexible job. She's an attorney. And so she's flexible in what she's doing in the area of practice she's in. So we were able to, and you're sitting there, you're dropping our kids off at school. I mean, none of it made sense. We're like, why am I dropping you off when I'm at home working? It didn't even make sense. And so, all of it, you don't eat as well. Every single aspect of it. And then at night, my only memory was an hour or two at night, tucking them in at night. My memory is every day, just the same thing, just tucking them in at night. And it was when do I get to teach them stuff? When do we get to learn real things? And so all these things just kind of come together in your head and you realize, oh, and then on top of that, the amount of time, right? Like, you know, the homeschooling part of it, it's an hour a day, maybe per kid, right? Like it's 30 minutes when they're young, you know, an hour a day max when they're young. It's like, you're just sitting there. It's like maybe a couple hours total to do all the kids cumulatively. And you're just like, wow. And then they're out playing and they're doing stuff. And then they're doing stuff with dad, doing stuff with mom, you know, depending on who's home at the time or whatever it is. So they're learning about real world stuff. And we get to, you know, turn on the TV for 1 hour and watch, you know, whatever the, you know, something that's, you know, Tuttle Twins or watching something where it's like actually educational or like, you know, something to that effect. But it was a little bit of an evolution in the sense of we knew we kind of want to do it. No one in our families had done that. So that was a little bit of like the scariness of like, hey, no one's done this. What are our parents or our families going to think? And fortunately, our families are all pretty good and they're, you know, pretty open to Jessica and I's craziness, extremeness, I guess, and being revolutionary, I guess, just a mindset. So they're all open to it. And now, you know, ironically, of some of our siblings and things like that are doing it or thinking about it and things of that nature. So it just, it, you know, it takes one person. That's where, like, again, it's these little things over time, coming back to what we were talking about earlier. It just takes one person to do something different or whatever it is. And then look, you know, families start changing, you know, your kids are changing. And that's where, like you said earlier, I have great hope for the future too, just because I see all of our kids. And they know the difference between Bitcoin and the rest of, you know, the currencies out there. They know, they don't know anything different. So in 20 years from now, when they're of age, and they will only know one thing. They will know the difference between all these things, unlike all of us who had to go through life and didn't know any of this stuff. And now we're getting rude awakenings. The younger generations will know much different. And this will be very normal to them to even homeschool or whatever. And, you know, this natural defunding on the state and moving to places that treat you better, using money that doesn't steal from you, all these different things that this naturally over time, one thing after another. You know, we were talking to Parker Lewis recently, and he was just saying, like, again, it's this inflection point where, you know, he thinks it's one out of 20 people that have to really understand Bitcoin and get it. You get to this point where, like, one, you know, this guy gets it and that girl gets it and then that guy gets it. And it just slowly happens over time. And then this, you know, the gradually and suddenly, and all of a sudden we get to a point where enough people in society, it's just this tipping point, the iceberg flipping, the gradually and suddenly, and just boom, all of a sudden people get it. And that's the defunding of the dollar, you know, the value of the dollar going to zero, you know, one day in the future, whenever that is. That's hyperinflation, loss of confidence, or, you know, a couple percent of people say, no more, I'm not accepting this. So again, all that to be said, I'd go down too many tangents, but it took a few years. I always give people a few years of grace, especially if that's all you're used to is the government run compliant, you know, complying and memorize, and this is the way it is, and this is what our family's done. It took us a couple years to get our affairs in order, make sure. I was doing real estate full time. I retired from playing hockey in 2012 and was in the minor leagues for a few years. And then I did real estate and investing in gold and silver, did real estate for, you know, 10, 11 years, whatever it was, helping people do that, or investing in my own properties, like doing all this stuff. And then, you know, once Bitcoin becomes obvious, it, to me, it was, holy cow, I need to get out of all this. This is on the Titanic. This is all the fiat world. I need to get out of this somehow. And so it just, this journey, this natural evolution, I even look for me, and I'm empathetic to people why they don't see things clearly. Because for me, this has been 20 years. I mean, 20, 25 years of being very political, then seeing the 08 crash when I'm graduating from Michigan State University, seeing that firsthand, living through that, and then raising money, having a business, you know, having people that work for me, all these things over the years. And I only know and have conviction in what I know because of all these experiences. And then I empathize and realize that a lot of people didn't have these experiences. So it just comes back to edifying what you were saying earlier. Again, like it's going to take time. What Parker said too, like it's going to take time. And we all, it seems obvious and it should happen tomorrow because it is obvious once you do see it, but it seems psychotic when you don't, right? So we're all psychopaths, you know, to the person who doesn't understand this and hasn't lived all these experiences. And so anyway, the schooling part is for anyone who can do it, you have to look into it. It's unbelievable. And the relationships that you, your kids have, I will say this too, a really quick story. Some friends of ours, they were homeschooling for a few years. Then they have five kids, and they're having some issues just with like some of the kids and, you know, stuff like that. Not to go into like crazy detail, but they put him into school for a couple, or for just earlier this year, for like a month, and were like immediately like, no, this is brutal. And it's a private school too, not the same one we went to, but they're like, no, this is brutal. Like kids, like immediate, the habits were worse, everything. They're like, whoa, 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 pulled them out. Like a month and a half later, already pulled them back out again. We're like, no, we will make this work. We'll figure out. It's wild, Walker. Just, you know, I don't have to tell you, you already know I'm preaching to the choir, but it's a wild, if anyone can do it, you have to look into it. You have to look into it and see how you can do it.
And I think one of the things is that you touched on, which is really important for people to realize, and what I always try to stress is that, like, most people think, oh, I couldn't do that. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time to do that. You know, depending on what your job situation is, what your financial situation is, whatever, But what you said is something that's so important, and I can echo that this is the same, was the same for me in the 90s when I was, you know, being homeschooled, right? Is that the time commitment, you think it's going to be a larger time commitment than it is, because your entire concept of how much time school takes is based on a system that caters to the lowest common denominator and whose sole purpose is to be daycare and indoctrination and to be a place where you send your kids to go for somebody else to raise them, basically. That you've got people spending, you've got basically state administrators spending more time with your own kids than you do. Now, that just doesn't smack right to me, right? Mm-hmm. But when you homeschool, you literally only need, and this isn't to say you're like giving them some like, well, you know, little Johnny, you got a grade of a butterfly today, and Beth, you got a grade of two giraffes, like, because we don't do A's and B's. It's not that. You can do literally the exact curriculum that the school does if you want to. It just doesn't take very much time. Because most of the time that's spent in school, in public school, is just wasted. It's just filler time. And it's also catering, especially if you have a smart kid.
Yeah.
It will beat that out of them, one. And it will make them slow down to the lowest common denominator, the slowest, basically, quintile of that class, right? Even if you have all the advanced placement and all, it doesn't matter. It will do that. But you only need a couple hours a day. Like, that's it. You don't need to do any homework beyond that either, especially at that age. None of that matters. None of that matters at all. How much do you use from when you were, 8 years old?
Exactly. Right?
Like, it's not like, it's good, like, you know, for you to learn like math and like how to write and like in science and things like that. But like, again, you don't need to be doing a bunch of meaningless fucking bullshit homework that's just busy work meant to keep them occupied after school so the teachers can say, look, I did my curriculum. I did what I was supposed to. I can check that off with the state board. No, you need a couple hours a day, and then your kids should literally be outside and be exploring and be messing around and getting into some mischief and starting fires, not in an arson way, but like in a constructive way.
Yep.
And just doing things that kids should do. They don't need to spend, they should never spend all that time indoors. Like, that's the most insidious part of it, is just indoors, fluorescent lighting, maybe windows if you're lucky, often not. And it's just like, that's not an environment that is conducive to anyone's learning. Like, that's not gonna be good. Right.
And
they will develop worse habits there. And I can speak from experience there. You know, that is because, again, I've seen both sides of this coin. But really, there's one thing I can impress upon people. To like, if my mom, she was an English major, had no degree in education. She had no degree in sciences or anything like that. If she could homeschool my sister and I, and then if both of us, when we did go to public school, I finished high school number one. My sister finished number two, different grade. Nope. She only finished number two because they gave her an A- in PE class, because that's a thing that should matter for just like stupid stuff, like dumb Holy stuff like cow. That. The point being, like, if my mom can do it before all of the tools that are available now, and you can attest to this, like all of the different, like you have access to the world at your fingertips online.
Yep.
Like, my mom had to get, you know, I think it was like the sunlight curriculum or something mailed to us. You know, like, and had to do this then we started using the internet once it got a little bit better, there was more stuff available, but now it's just night and day difference.
There's so
much available to you, so many resources, all sorts of like even AI tutors and stuff now too, which are like really good for a lot of stuff. But the most important thing is it's about time.
Yep.
Do you want to spend that time with your kids, or do you want to abdicate the responsibility for your kids and give that responsibility to the state? I know the answer for me. You know the answer for you, but that's what people, you have to be really conscious about it. But the other thing is, I think that a lot of people feel as well, depending on your working situation, right? Because typically in most families these days, most parents have to work, or, you know, have to work. They're like, I think people have also kind of tricked themselves into thinking, well, we have to do this because if you know, one of us didn't work, we would take a cut to our standard of life. We wouldn't, you know, have the same standard of life, but it's like,
for sure.
But like, what's the point of that? Like, what's the point of that standard of living? Is the point of it to provide the best possible life for you and your family? Because if so, the best way to do that for your kids is to spend more time with them, not to spend less. Like, they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna care that you, you know, got them a little bit more expensive toy. They're gonna care if you were there. Like, were you there? Were you with them? And that matters more than anything else. Like, it's something I think Bitcoiners really need to look at this. And again, do whatever you want. They're not my kids. They're your kids. Yep. You should decide, right? That's like, I'm not the state. I'm not trying to tell you what to do with your kids or not do with what your kids. But I really think it's like, man, what maybe another sidebar here is, what really blows my mind is people who spend a ton of money. And I know a lot of people like this who spend a lot of money to send their kids to like really expensive, like daycare programs, really expensive daycare or preschool or you know, kindergarten programs. Like before, it's not even any school. It's that's just daycare, right? Now I can like a couple hours a week or something to get like some, you know, time with other kids and to do cool stuff. Like, okay, that's a different story. Some Montessori style education, great. Okay, different story. But like, if you're just sending your kids to a daycare service all day, every day, paying a ton of money for it, and then most of one person's after-tax salary goes towards childcare, just get rid of that. Just get rid of the childcare and get rid of that salary, and you're basically breaking even with a lower tax bracket, like because you have less income. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand that for some people. It's just like, but again, to each their own. Maybe it's not for everyone, but I can pretty much guarantee that you, Brent, I'm sure I haven't met your kids, but if I had to guess, I'd say they are probably incredibly well-adjusted, have no issues talking to anyone of any age. That's usually one of the biggest marks of homeschooled kids, is mm-hmm. they don't have some weird complex about like talking to adults or being weird around adults. No, it's just, they can talk to anyone because they haven't been artificially segmented into you only hang out with people who are your exact same age. And if there's an adult in the room, they are the only authority figure there and you must listen to them regardless of, you know, what you think of Mrs. Smith and whether or not you think she's a moron, right? Like you got to listen to them. I don't know. I'm rambling yeah. now, but no, I think it's such an important thing.
Really. It's huge. It really is. I mean, and you do see it because again, like growing up in government run schools myself and then seeing the kids in and out for even for a couple of years and then seeing friends and like some of these stories, it is so, and like you said, the habits, everything is just wildly different. And there are these artificial things you don't even realize. Like you just don't realize that as a parent or even as a kid growing up, there's these like, you know, you're grouped in with all the kids your own age. It's just like, you know, again, it's wild. And now, because of the time, you know, we're able to do a lot of other things too. Like we're able to go on trips. You know, we've taken a couple Bitcoin conferences. You know, we've done, you know, they do jujitsu, you know, once or twice a week. They do, awesome. You know, yeah, I mean, like it's amazing. And they, you know, they do piano, they do jujitsu, they're doing tennis, like they're doing all these things. You know, skating a little bit now, it's cold out right now. So, you know, like we get to do things that you just don't normally get to do. And it's just completely beat out of you the other direction. And so you have this, like, again, there's like this weird game theory. I feel like it almost plays out with children as well, because you just made me think of it a minute ago where we're so caught up in the, like, what's going on in Ukraine or like what's going on in all these other areas of the world instead of what's focusing on what's important right in front of us, you know, and like, and just dealing with what's right in front of us. And it's like this weird game theory of like, well, you know, no one else is doing it. So like, I have to go do, you know, I have to go, you know, make sure I'm thinking about Ukraine too. Like no other person is, it's like, well, who cares what other people are doing? You know, like do it for yourself. Like you focus on your family and your kids, because if you do that, then everyone else will eventually start doing it at some point in life too, whether it's through Max Payne or you're leading by example, and these things play out. Because if everyone's focusing on their own family and spending time with their children and growing their children, then a lot of these problems melt away. They cease to exist because we're focusing on what's right in front of us instead of looking over the children, looking over our spouse right in front of us and worrying about what's going on in Ukraine or what's going on over in the Middle East or what's going on in the Far East. It's like, you got problems right here. Like you have people right here that want your attention. They want your love. And we don't even give that to them. And we're all guilty to this to some degree, right? But being present, right? We hear a lot about like intentional parenting nowadays and all these like Gen X, Gen Z terms and all this stuff. It's like, just be with your kids. Like if you're there, just be there. You just like do it, you know, like put the phone down, like do these simple things. And at the end of life, like when you talk to old people and you see it, they generally aren't saying like, oh man, I wish I didn't have so many kids, or I wish I had, you know, they're saying like, I wish I would have had kids, or like, I mean, how many 40 year olds are going to see like crying in their phone, women be like, I wish I would have had kids, this stupid, you know, career, you know, blah, 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 blah. I've been doing it for 20 years. Just every day you look at someone breaking down and entrapped on the hamster wheel and being sold a lie, just shipped down the river like cattle. And you know, what's the Washington quote of like, you know, just dumb and silent will be led to slaughter. And just no one waking up and saying, I'm going a different way. And it's not fun. It's not easy, as you well know. And Bitcoiners know, like you're made fun of a lot. You're how many, again, the FUD, the endless, like just, you know, dealing with objections. It's not a very fun life in that sense of like, you're just constantly dealing with people like fighting you all the time. And there's some sickness I probably in all of us Bitcoiners that we just, you know, my coach at Michigan State always used to say, You got to love the battle. And, you know, he's saying in hockey terms, right? But like, you know, when you're in their corners or you're in front of the net, you know, like that's your area. That's your territory. You have to love to battle. And that's life. You know, it's a microcosm of life. You have to love to battle. And, you know, battling for yourself, battling for your family, for your spouse, for your children, battling for the truth, battling for, you know, it's just, we've lost that, you know? And so I always go back to like, men don't get punched in the face anymore. It's always like my theory of like growing up in the 90s, right? Like we'd wrestle as kids. And it was like really the last vestiges of like, you get in fights with your buddy, we're playing, you know, whatever, you know, like some game and you get in a fight and you're getting, you know, yelling at each other and you get punched, you're wrestling. And now it's like kids are in front of the screen the whole time. They're just on the iPad. They're doing all these things where it's like, there's no feedback loop. It's like, I can keyboard warrior to anything in the world, but like, you're not going to say that to my face. And because it's just like, we have this world where like, we think we can just get away with anything. And then we've broken all these feedback loops. So, you know, Bitcoin again, reintroduces these feedback loops and reestablishes to build foundation on this firm, you know, concrete to rebuild the structures on top of that, on sound money. And so just, it all comes full circle, but it's, man, if people can do it, you look into it, and because it is the best thing, you know, being with, you know, and again, seeing the old people and what they say about, you know, the children, I wish I would have spent more time with my kids, or, you know, whatever it is. And homeschooling does a long way towards doing that. If you are mobile, if you work at home or whatever it is, and I will say this too, like when our kids started homeschooling, like it was a learning process for me. Like I had to learn to be around the kids more almost, especially as a guy, you know, and just, you know, being vulnerable in that sense, or like, you know, being vulnerable, you know, right now. I tell people at times, I probably should talk more about it, but it's you as a guy, like you are away more. So you're kind of like, okay, like, well, what do I do here? Like, oh, it's just me and the kids or whatever. Oh, you know? And so there's this very real like learning that has to go through, but like the relationships I've seen with my kids and just them together is night and day from what it was, you know, 3 years ago or, you know, so anyway, you could talk about it forever, but I think the point's been made. It's something to look into if you can.
I love it, and I've got one follow-up point that I've got to say, and then I have maybe a zooming out moment. The follow-up point is around the being punched in the face. It's so funny you say that. Like, I've told this to Carlos so many times. I'm like, you ever see a guy acting like a real bitch? Probably he's never been punched in the face hard 100%. In his life. Like, I think every 100%. Guy needs to get punched in the face at least once, and whether that's in the gym, you know, whether that's like, if you like never, like, man, fuck, we used to beat the shit out of each other like with big sticks. Like, I mean, like do damage, like real big damage. And then it's like, you go inside. Does anybody say shit to the parents? Nope. No, you shut the hell up, you know, beating the shit out of each other, playing boot hockey, you know, dropping somebody into a chokehold, like cracking their head on the ice, and everybody goes in. Man. Don't you dare cry. Yes. Don't you dare cry in there, Jimmy.
Yep.
Because like, we don't want this room. We're going to go back out after lunch.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no. Okay, so that aside, everyone should get punched in the face. If you've never been punched in the face, punch yourself right now, hard in the face. Better than nothing. Or just
not financial
start
advice.
Shit with some,
this is not
financial. Not financial advice. Just manhood advice. Yeah. But the other thing is like, maybe like zooming out, because I know you and I could both go on for hours like about homeschooling specifically, but in the interest of maybe like starting to put a bow around this, I think as we zoom out, one of the reasons that this is so important is because as Bitcoiners, I believe it is very important for us to sort of draw lines in the sand in terms of what is non-negotiable for us. One of the things that's non-negotiable for me is the state telling me what to do with my kids. That is non-negotiable for me. There's no way I'm going to accept a world like they live in Germany where they can tell me, no, it is illegal for you to homeschool your kids and we will take them away if you break the law. And that's what happens. Like, that is what will happen if you try to homeschool your kids in Germany. And Germany's, I don't mean to pick on Germans, a lot of German friends, love me some German time. Mm-hmm. Big pretzel and Bratwurst fan. Also a fine Pilsner beer, you know, every now and again. But that sucks. That sucks that the state can tell you you're not allowed to do that with your kids. You're not allowed to do what you know to be right for your children. I won't accept that. I don't think we should as Bitcoiners. And I think we need to find more of these lines in the sand where we say, no, the state has no business here. This is nothing. This state has no right to tell me what to do with my children. Like, okay, you say, well, Walker, what if, you know, you're like, you're abusing kids? I'm not. All right. And for people like, that's a different conversation, right? If we're talking about people that are, you know, abusive parents, that's a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
And that's the same sort of argument that's like, oh, we can't allow Bitcoin because some people might use it for criminal activities.
Right. Yeah.
You do not punish the law abiding, you know, citizens who are trying to simply do good and do well because of the actions of a few, right?
Yes.
Like that's always the excuse they use. And I think we need to look at these as things that are non-negotiables for us, where it's like, no, you need to push back hard against the state trying to tell you what to do with your kids, or what to do with your money, or that you deserve to have privacy in the States. And no, sorry, that's just too dangerous, because some people might commit, you know, acts of terrorism if they have too much privacy. Like, no, the state does this. The state wants to encroach in every area. And this is how they get you in totalitarian systems. What do they start with? Well, first they start with they disarm the populace. Then they go and start checking to see who is going to be, and I know this from experience, hearing from my in-laws and all the Romanian friends I have who grew up in communist Romania. What did they do? They went to the villages, and at first they had these rabble rousers who would go out there and say, we don't like communism. Who's with us? Sign this petition to show us you're against communism. Well, they took everyone who signed that petition and threw them in jail. It was a trap, right? It was a trap that they threw.
Yeah.
They disarmed everyone. They take away all private property. They make sure you can't speak freely publicly or privately because everyone's watching you. But how do you make sure people can't speak freely privately? Publicly, that's easy, right?
Yeah.
You shut down communication channels. You cut off from the outside world. You make sure everybody's scared shitless to say anything in public or the party will get you. But privately, how do you do that? It's a lot harder inside the home. It's a lot easier now that you have digital surveillance. But back then, and the premise still applies, well, you need to have somebody who's willing to tattle from within the home. How do you get that? You take the youngest and most impressionable members of that family, you put them in indoctrination camps, aka compulsory public schooling, and you make sure that you tell them exactly how terrible it would be if their parents were to say something like, we don't like the Communist Party. And that for their parents' own safety, if they were to say something like that, they should, of course, the child should come in and tell the teacher to make sure that the teacher can then, of course, get the parents the help that they need, you know, the re-education that they need. This is the insidious thing about schooling. This is why totalitarians must control education, because if you can control the next generation of minds, you can control the country forever. Mm-hmm. If you always have that control. And so that's why homeschooling is like so fundamentally important. I was talking with you about this, talked with Daniel Prince about this, and you know, credit to him because he's the one who said it. I will quote him here, but it's like, you need the separation of education and state, not just money and state. Education and state needs to be separated too. And I think that's so fundamental. Because if we want to actually make the future that we know we can herald in, the future we know we can bring, if we want to make it stick, we need to make sure that the next generation that will inherit that future is actually prepared to keep it, right? If that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is fundamental. And we go through, and what, and again, what's tough with everyone, I think, is that it's this... this mentality of like the game's over, like we've won. And I've seen it for so long. It's like I said, you know, politically, you know, 20 years ago, it was very political. And it would generally be like, oh, you won. And then you just went away. And it's like, okay, we won, wash our hands of it. And then it just goes away. And like these fights of separating money and state, separating church and state, separating education and state, these fights don't end just because like a bill is signed into law or whatever, even if whatever that's even worth at this point now. And, you know, look, I mean, the guy in office now can like pass things, but then like if the courts, you know, I think it's a fight, like nothing even like happens, right? We've just evolved in such chaos, but I'm not going to digress here. It's this fight that never ends. And this is where coming back to, you have to love to battle. We've lost that will, that fight in us. And that's why like I'll get crazy. I mean, I'll lose it at times. And like people are like, just stack, you know, stack and chill and just do that. And it's like, you gotta have some fight in you. You gotta have some, you know, piss and vinegar in you. Like you gotta like, yeah, show me some life here a little bit. And that's where these fights never end. They never stop. There's always a new finish line. And that's what I've seen from people so much is like, it's just like tiring. It's like, okay, well, this is tiring. Like, I just want my head back in the sand. Like, I just want, you know, whatever. And someone like a David Goggins, for instance, the guy is always like, there's never a finish line, right? He's got a big following now, but like, that's tiring to a lot of people. I mean, you see a lot of people that talk about it. It's like, that's tiring. And it's like, he's an extreme example maybe, but like I'm making the point in the sense that these fights never end. And so like separating education and state, this is, it's so, so incredibly massive and they go hand in hand. You can't just do one and not the other. Now, I mean, maybe the hope is that you do one of these big things and we get one of these things accomplished and then the other happens, you know, maybe it's education and state go first, you know, it's maybe it's money and state and then hopefully then education and state comes right after that. These dominoes start to fall where, you know, you hope that once you can get the money ripped away from the state, then these things start to heal themselves. The river starts to clean itself up and it's not tainted as much. I mean, because again, you can't have honest society from dishonest money, just like you can't have good fruit from a bad tree. It's impossible. It's not how life works. So we need to start reorienting ourselves back to this truth and to have these, because again, it goes back to, like we said earlier, we're asking the wrong questions. It's like, who killed Charlie Kirk? Who did this and that? It's like, that's not the point. That's not why did it happen? You know, how did it happen? Those are the questions that we need to be asking. And that's where, again, those at the top love people go down these rabbit holes, but they're missing the mark. They're not asking the right questions. So it goes, people, they're chasing squirrels or chasing, you know, shiny objects. So they love it because it distracts really smart people from the, like you said, from asking the right questions, where most of society, again, they're 10 miles away, they're another country away, they're not near the target. And that's fine too. But the people that are most sinister, the people that are right around, the Tucker Carlsons, or a lot of people, they're like, they're right around the target, and they're like right there, and they're seemingly super smart, and they're putting together these really nice, well-crafted cases, but they're not off the Titanic yet. You know, they're one town over from the target. So the shrapnel doesn't affect the target. And the target is separating these things. it's minimizing the state and reducing it down to whatever size it is. Size of a mustard seed, or it doesn't exist. You know, again, we can have these debates, but it's that's the world we need to be in. And that's the world that I do believe, if you would have told me, Walker, 20 years ago, again, that we're in this position where we're asking these questions of, like, conspiracy theories. They're just, like, out there, and people are talking about him. The richest guy in the world, who knows what side the guy's on, doesn't matter. But he's out there talking about, and those things are coming out of his mouth and questioning mainstream narratives. I would have laughed you out of the room. So to your point, I am greatly hopeful. We have Bitcoin, as you and Jeff Booth talked about. We have these answers. We have the ability to change things. We're reorienting society. And people have never been asking these questions. These are just, it was so taboo. I mean, you would have been laughed out of the room if you and I went into a room 20 years ago and said a lot of these things. We would have been laughed out of the room. And now people actually engage with you. Like, you could actually have conversations with people about a lot of these things, because it's starting to incept itself into more mainstream society, which is absolutely phenomenal. So, like, again, to your point, like, it is good to zoom out and realize we do need to separate some of these huge things, but we're going the right way. I remember 10 years ago, I was in a local chamber event. And I had a lady that was there, an older lady. Her son was at U of M Law School, University of Michigan Law School. And she was like questioning us. She was like, why? And this was 10 years ago. This was like 2015, 2016, 2017, whatever it was. And she was like, I just don't get it. Like, you're getting all this debt. This is dumb, blah, 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 you know, whatever. It was U of M Law School. I mean, like, that's like, you know, one of the biggest law schools in the country or whatever it is. But it's like, she was even questioning it. And it's like, I have seen personally over time, people just starting to question all these things we've been told and indoctrinated for so long. So that's where, like, again, you zoom out and we get into this nitty gritty at times as we do, and we have to. But when you zoom out, we are directionally going the right way. Hands down, without a shadow of a doubt, we are going the right direction. It doesn't mean there's not going to be bumps along the way. It's not going to be chaotic and it's going to be crazy at times. It definitely is. But we are directionally going the right way. And that's really all you can ask for at the end of the day.
Amen to that. You know what I love about this conversation is we have not even been tempted to talk about price because there's because it's the most it's the most boring thing happening.
It's the most
right
boring
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. No, but I this has been a great time getting the chance to do this with you. I'm glad we made this happen today. And again, I hope that this, for Bitcoiners, for anybody who's listening, whether you're a mom or a dad, probably more dads listening to this show than moms. If there's some mommies out there, hello, mommies. I'm glad you're listening too. Moms need Bitcoin as well. Like, I hope this gave you some context for why Brandon and I feel so strongly about homeschooling. Because again, you know, Daniel Prince is another person who's been out there, and his kids are I've had a chance to meet his kids. Incredible kids. I mean, really like amazing kids. Those kids shine. They will do great things in this world. I am certain of that. And they're like, they've been going to Bitcoin conferences. They've been speaking at Bitcoin conferences for like years. You know, his daughter has been on his podcast, co-hosting with him, you know, for years. Like, that's amazing. Those are kids that are already living in the future. And like, you can have that too. And again, that's why it is so important, though. It's because you're going to see, I think, a growing bifurcation, a growing divide, a growing kind of line in the sand, again, if you will, between people who are giving ever more responsibility for their own lives, for their family's lives, their children's lives, for their futures to the state, and people who are doing the exact opposite, trying to take as much personal responsibility for that as possible. Because that's really the only way you can go. It's like, it's not going to stay static. The state wants more power. You as an individual should want the state to have less power and for you to have more power. The only way that you get that is by taking it. And it's going to mean some sacrifice, and it's not going to be a cakewalk. Like us saying, it's only a couple hours a day worth. That doesn't mean it's easy, but it's worth it.
Yep.
I can promise you, the older I have gotten, and I tell my parents this every chance I get, whenever they're here playing with our son and hanging out and seeing the next generation, you know, that they ushered in. I tell them, the older I get, the more grateful I am to them that they homeschooled me. like with each passing year, because I see now, especially now that I'm a parent, I see even more the sacrifices they made that I wasn't paying attention to at the time. I couldn't understand
know.
As
you can't,
a, you can't know.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, oh my God, wait, Dad, you mean you caught like 200 pitches a day from me with like your bad knees from football and your bad bat. And like, but you just did that for, you know, like, or you know, like all of the things that they did that you come to appreciate so much more. And I promise you, your kids will appreciate it too. Maybe not right away. I'm not saying they're going to see it all, but they will see it and they'll get more grateful over time. And I think that's one of the really powerful things is that I think that it has the power to keep generations closer at the end of the day, which we need more of. Like we need to be able to have kids learning from not just their parents also, but their grandparents, their aunts and uncles. Like you want that. Yep. You want that intergenerational communication because it's so valuable. And that's one of the things that we've started to lose, I think, in modern society quite a lot to our own detriment, honestly, to our own detriment.
Absolutely.
But and Brandon, go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say, I mean, that again, that's the John Taylor Gatto books. I know Daniel Prince has talked about this. I know you're fond of it as well. I mean, it's like the intergenerational living is what we had for thousands of years, you know, and that was because those people that cared about you the most, right? So they're going to parent you and they keep you in line and whatever. But now we've had, you know, really in the last 50, 60, 70 years, we'll call it, you know, at least amplified at that time was this peer-to-peer learning instead, where it's like, you know, your friends, your buddies, that's how you're learning things instead of the people that care for you most. And what has accompanied that? It was obviously the money being ripped away from us. And so now mom's working and not just dad. And now their mom and dad are out on credit and spent all their savings. And now they're getting divorced. You know, like all these things are happening. The breakdown of the family, the intergenerational living is gone. You know, people are, you know, hey, mom and dad, I don't even have money for you now. So now you have to go to some, you know, senior livings, you know, you're gone. I mean, it's like, it's an absolute disaster. And that all has to be accounted for now going forward. Society is going through that accounting, whether it's, again, the sedation, the drugs, the illegal or illegal drugs or whatever it is, like the sedation, the distraction, the chaos, all this is what we've been going through really for a couple of decades now. And I think we're going to be continuing to go through this for a little while, but it's going to reorient. It's going to, you know, the Citadel, Freedom Cities, whatever, all these different areas are going to be these beacons of hope that people start flocking to and saying, hey, I'm done. I finally, again, you can lead the horse to water, like we said in the beginning, but you can't make them drink. And that's going to be, when do people hit their points where they're like, okay, I'm actually thirsty now. I want to drink water. Like I'm ready for you. I'm ready for the truth now. Just give it to me. So
I love it. Yeah. The last thing I'll say, and then we'll wrap up here, is just that no one will ever love your kids as much as you do. And the government sure as hell won't. They can't. You will always love your kids more than anyone else ever could.
Yep.
So don't give control of your kids over to somebody who cannot possibly love your kids or care about them in the way that you do, because that's what you're doing. On that note, Brandon, I want to be conscious of your time, because again, I hate to even take time away from the kids, but you know what? I know that your kids are probably damn proud of their dad and the fact that he goes out there and speaks the truth. Where can people find you speaking the truth if they want to hear more rants about homeschooling, rants about Bitcoin, whatever it may be? Where do you want to send folks?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it again, brother. It's just an honor to come on here, talk about all this stuff. Like we said, it's not about Bitcoin price. That's, like you said, it's the least fun part about what we do, quite honestly. And it's about how can we change humanity and reorient society. And that's, you know, when you see it, when you see the wizard behind the curtain, you see it. And, you know, my channel is just, you know, my name, Brandon_Gentile. I believe that's, you know, Twitter, you know, Nasser, you know, Primal, YouTube, everything. We go interview people as well, do live streams, do this stuff. And we need 10,000 more people like us doing this exact thing. And I think we're going to get there. I know we're going to get there. It's going to take some time, but, we're on our way. So I appreciate it, brother.
Appreciate you too, man. Step by step. Enjoy some time with the fam. I'm gonna go do the same. Great catching up as always, and yeah, I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Walker.
And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening. And share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.